Welcome to the 72nd edition of the Wolves Win podcast. I'm your host, Nick, and tonight I'm by Tom.
Hi, everyone.
And Matt.
Hello, everybody.
This one, we're going to be looking at the latest two league games and looking back at, or looking forward to, should I say, the Brighton FA Cup game. And we're going to have a special guest on the show as well. We've got a Brighton fan lined up to give us his insights into Brighton and who he's scared of in the Wolves attack and defense, well, Wolves in general. But first, let's look at the last two games. Gents, we'll start with the Stoke game. Shan Turner in goal, Ellie Wilson, Anna Morfitt, Tammy George, Merrick Will, Amber Hughes, KJ, Liv Ferguson, Destiny Toussaint, Beth Roberts and Beth Merrick. Matt, it was pretty much the team we'd expect to see, wasn't it? Maybe Sophie Bramford missing out was the sort of the one exception in that, that it would be a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, and a tricky one because the previous game obviously was that brilliant performance against Reading. So it's hard to drop anybody really or change tactics really going into that. But, you know, Stoke's very much a different game. A game we went into obviously expecting to win, especially at home. So, yeah, there's a decision to be made there.
Yeah, and obviously we don't know how much of the selection and the how badly the players were impacted by the food poisoning issues. And I know talking to some of the parents, etc., some were lucky that they managed to dodge the chicken wraps. Others were really badly laid up. And understand a couple of the Reading players were actually in hospital, or at least visited hospital because of the food poisoning. Yeah, I think we'll have to take a bit of that into consideration about sort of how the performance was. But we did actually start strongly. I mean, we've got the highlights going at the minute. We seemed to start strongly, didn't we? From what you're seeing, Tom, starting strongly.
Yeah, we did. From what I've seen on the highlights, obviously I wasn't at this game, but from what I've seen on the highlights reel, yeah, we was a better team to start the game. It was creating chances. But I think we just lack that little bit of quality in that final third. I think that's what it comes down to, because we was creating chances, but you know, we just need that little bit of quality up front.
Yeah, we've just seen the Beth Merrick strike at the goal, which the Stoke keeper did really well to turn round. And certainly, I mean, I was there. Fortunately, obviously, you had COVID, didn't you, Tom? And couldn't make it. And we sort of dominated the first 20 minutes, half an hour. Robbo was probably she just slid in there to get the ball, possibly unlucky to lucky to get away with just the yellow on that one. I mean, you could sort of there the Ellie Wilson chance, which another day she would have put away. We dominated this game from the off. And it seems, yeah, as you say, it seems to be that we just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, I'm quite surprised really watching these highlights, just how dominant we were. You know, I listened on the radio and that's the impression you got speaking to you. But some of these chances, I mean, it's quite criminal really how we didn't convert some of these chances. And as we're watching now, you know, we can see that Stoke then will just have the occasional attack and soon enough they take the lead from that.
Yeah, it sort of countered. I mean, you know, countered well occasionally. But again, I mean, we dealt with most stuff that they put into the box. And this is the sort of the lead up to the goal. Shan's going to be kicking herself for that one because she drops the ball. I think she's unlucky, because I think if she had another foot, you know, sort of second or so, she would have actually got hands onto it properly and the ref would have given it as a free kick, because she certainly seemed to get kicked in the hands by that. But that was it. You know, that was their only real chance. It certainly wasn't, they weren't really creating anything. And so my one impression I got from this game, and we're into the second half, that's their other big chance, header over the bar. They were playing up. They had cramp from 30 minutes in, kicking the balls, you know, kicking the balls away at throw-ins. They're booking for the was for, you know, they got booked for that. I mean, we're seeing these chances in the second half, Morph's delivery into the box, hitting, you know, getting heads on it, but we just couldn't penetrate. It was that final third, really struggled. We kept, you know, carry on there. There's Amber. Whilst we're just watching this go through, I think one thing we had mentioned from Ben Fawn, who dropped us a message. His comment was it's really similar to the Burnley match. Sort of the attack combinations just wasn't looking, sort of didn't look threatening. And we just looked a bit vulnerable to any decent counter attack. Look, but I think he's picking out that once we got the subs on a bit later on, we seemed to, sort of pick up a bit of pace and sort of a bit more urgency. And certainly it was interesting. We got Sky Owen on and she looked bright, sort of really pushing on. But you can see here we've now got Jade on the pitch. And there's Sky sort of getting stuck in and sort of really helping push the ball forward. But again, we just couldn't get that final ball into the box. And it was criminal with the amount of options. It's been something we've picked up all season, Matt, about sort of how poor we've been in that final third. Do you want to just come in and comment on that?
I think it's been something over the last 2 or 3 years, really, hasn't it? Despite the success we've had there, there's some games there that we could have been winning 10-0, and nobody actually really wants to see teams at this level winning 10-0. But that's ultimately what cost us a league title last season, effectively. You know what I mean? On goal difference, and it's just something where, that comment there about the attacking combinations. That bit to me doesn't seem to be the problem, because the chance creation is there. If you're having the 25 shots in the game, some of those shots we've missed there are 6 yards out and you're hitting it straight to the keeper. You've got into the right positions, you've progressed upfield, and then you've been not able to convert in that final moment, or there's maybe been quite a weak shot right at the end straight to the keeper. It's been clinical, I think, more than the attacking combinations for me.
Tom, have we relied on Amber Hughes far too much, and therefore when we've not got somebody in to directly compete with Amber, and therefore, when she's not around, we're missing her. But when if she's not on it, and we know strikers go through sort of phases, is that something we need? Do we need another striker who can, in theory, could put away 20 goals a season?
I think, we have relied on Amber a lot. She's been the one who's been getting a lot of goals for us up front. And yeah, strikers do go out of form, as you've noted. And I think we do. I think we need to bring somebody in to compete. I know Jade Cross can do a job, but she's a different, total different option. I think that we need a strong strong forward, a one what's going to be tough on the ball, what's going to challenge for everything, and one what gives us a different option as well in getting balls in the box, because we all know that Amber's not the tallest of strikers. But I think I noted when was it Maz, what we got rid of last,
Maz Taha, yeah.
Maz Taha, she gave us that different option. She was very physical up front, and it was that different option what we need. And I think that's what I would go for. Somebody like a Maz Taha up front, what you can get balls into a box, so she's going to be very physical up front, and that's something what we need. We need that different option, because at the minute, although Amber's a top class player, it's just not working out at the minute, is it? So I think we do need a different option to switch it up and to switch, and we need somebody who's capable of starting as well. So yeah, I think that's somewhere in the summer what Macca should be looking at.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll come on to the goalkeeper situation in a second on the back of the goal we conceded. But we've got two top class goalkeepers who are pushing each other all the time. We haven't got sort of criticism of Jade. It sounds unfair, but we haven't got two Ambers pushing each other all the time, have we? I think that's the key. We'll just watch the sort of the goal. Another set piece from Morph, and Ellie Wilson, who's probably, who can actually be classed probably as one of our most lethal players, in fact. Five goals so far this season. I mean, we picked up last time she scored, it was her best season. Well, she'd added another one to her tally. And she's a real threat from those set pieces, isn't she? Matt.
Yeah, I think any set piece, really, you're always looking on getting onto Ellie Wilson's head. She's that threat. And even in other games last month, we saw her actually getting the assist against Reading. So she's from a, in those attacking moments, whether it's from a set piece or just getting forward, she's a real big threat for us. And a player that we obviously want to be keep, championship level player that obviously we want to be keeping for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. Just quickly on the whole Stoke situation. I mean, I mentioned there that they were doing the dirties, they're kicking the balls away, they're cramping up from 30 minutes in. One of the things I did notice was they didn't bring a physio with them. And Tails ended up having to deal with them. And, the first notice was when their goalkeeper went down. I mean, first of all, 100% credit for Tails being absolute professional. Doesn't matter which player it was, treating them. But Matt, it shouldn't be at this level. Stoke should always be bringing a physio with them, shouldn't they?
No, and I'm going to be quite balanced here. I think Stoke know we're the better team. So the stuff you're talking about there of going down and all the dark arts, I don't mind that personally. And I think if we're mid-table, well, we are mid-table, we're mid-table, and let's say we were 1-0 up against Newcastle yesterday, I'd have loved to have seen us going down and doing the dark arts. So I'm not going to fault them too much for that part. But for a third-tier team to not be bringing a physio and to not have the setup right in that sense, especially with all the stuff we hear coming from Stoke, and them looking like they want to overtake us in terms of going on resources and all stuff, then it's a very basic thing that they need to get right, isn't it?
Completely. I mean, Tom, I know Matt says he doesn't mind the dark arts, but subs coming on without permission of the ref. I mean, I know if we had Si on here, he'll be spitting feathers that they were coming on without the ref's permission. To be fair, I think the ref missed the trick. He should have booked them the first time they came on without permission. What's your thoughts on that and the wider dark arts piece?
For me, the blame's got to lie at the ref's door. I think we should be getting a grip on the game. As you say, you should have booked him earlier. If you don't put your authority on a game, players will think that they can get away with things. And, but that's exactly what we're doing. You need a strong referees. We need stronger referees in this league. And I think we spoke about with Stoke as well, kicking the ball away. At times now, at the beginning of the season, we was told that if you kick the ball away, it's a yellow card straight away. We're seeing it in was it the first few weeks of the season or the first month of the season? And now all of a sudden, that seems to have not happening, and it's not happening much in all leagues now. But if you're going to create rules, then you've got to stick to them, and you've got to put and a referee's got to put their authority on a game from the off. If they don't, then that's where instances like this happen. So, in my opinion, the ref needs to be stronger and take action earlier to prevent stuff like this happening.
Yeah, certainly the first yellow was kicking the ball away twice, which maybe you gave them the benefit of the doubt the first time that they were trying to pass it to the player, to the Wolves player. But yeah, it certainly I think it was the and it was certainly Saffron Jordan, who's an experienced championship level striker, coming on without permission of the ref, and having to be sent back to sort of wait to be called onto the pitch. It's as you say, it's you're right, Matt. It's dark arts, but it's sort of like it's that. Yeah, ref needs to grip it, doesn't it? I mean, just carrying on picking up with what Ben says, that game, we just felt like we could have realistically, bar that Ellie shot, we could have had another 200 shots and probably wouldn't have scored another goal. Is there anything else that we need to do as a team? Is there something that Macca's missing? Bar shooting practice down at training on Tuesday night. Is there anything else that they need to be thinking about, Matt?
You know what? I don't know, because watching that, like I said earlier, it doesn't feel like the problem is creating the chances. He's finishing, isn't it? So it is shooting practice. It was shots 3 yards out that were hit straight at the keeper. It's on paper, you think that's something that's easy to rectify. I guess it's not really, and it comes down to belief and confidence. But as great as the Reading game was, you think of the chances that day as well. And you start getting to the point where it's like, oh, we're not going to do this, are we? And as fans, you start losing that belief that it's never going to go in. And we've probably seen that quite a lot, really, haven't we? Where we've dominated games, and oh God, it was the Fylde game last season, wasn't it? Where we must have had 100 shots, and it just would not happen. So, I mean, getting those players in that are going to be more clinical and are going to be more lethal, then I guess that is one of the options too. But I think that style of football and the way we play, I don't think there's too much to fault really, from in my opinion. It is just making sure you convert those chances.
Tom, do you think it could just be psychological? That there's a millstone hanging around our forwards' neck that they feel the pressure on them. Actually, what they need is a good hour on the psychologist chair and sort of get it all out of the system. Is that what's needed? You know, sports psychologist, good chat, and I'm simplifying it there, but a good chat and it will be okay.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure where the problem lies, to be fair, because we are creating them chances, and I'd be more worried if we wasn't creating chances. But we are creating them, and it's just getting that bit of quality in front of goal and working on that final touch, because I think I've spoke about it before in previous pods. Well, I think sometimes we take that one too much extra touch when we don't need to. Macca's going to be spitting feathers because, you know, we're creating plenty, and we've just, for some unknown reason, we just cannot put the ball in the back of the net. So it's, I just don't know what Macca can do to improve it other than shooting practice, or as you say, whether it's psychological or what. But yeah, it's just, I'd be more concerned if he wasn't creating the chances, but yeah, we just need to improve on that final touch and that little bit of quality in front of goal.
And Matt, are we just going to suddenly find they're going to get an absolute smashing one day when it all just clicks for them? Is that the hope?
Well, I think we've said this for 2 years, haven't we? I will happily take us winning every single game 1-0 and getting promoted. So I don't think it has to be about thrashing a team and winning 10-0, but it's just making sure you take those chances when they matter, just like we did against Reading.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think there's not a lot really we can say. But crack on with the shooting practice, girls. Before we move on to the Newcastle game, obviously this Newcastle game was yesterday. It was a long bloody way from anywhere. So I think quite a few of us watched the Newcastle commentary, and certainly I muted their commentary and had our very own Matthew Ponter on from the Wolves commentary on, so I get a balance of commentary. Three changes for the team, Matt. I'll start with the easy one in a way. Sophie Bramford in for Liv Ferguson. I say it's easy. Sophie's obviously played really well. I think there was a need for that sort of extra midfielder, really, wasn't there, really, against Newcastle?
I think so. I think you've got to have that admission of Newcastle here are going to be slightly superior on quality, definitely superior on fitness. And you're going to need to pack that midfield in there, you know. Same with the back three. I thought it was quite important to have the back three as well. So can't fault tactically on those aspects.
Yeah, and Tom, sort of the one of the other changes, the sort of surprise change really was Emma Cross coming in for Ellie Wilson. Ellie wasn't actually in the match day squad at all. That was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it, Tom?
Yeah, it was. Because Ellie's been probably one of the best defenders we've had this season. You know, she's dangerous as well on set pieces, as we've seen. Against Stoke, so yeah, she's a great big miss for the club. But obviously, in the news, what come out during the week as well, so maybe you can understand why she wasn't in the squad. But yeah, she was a massive miss.
Yeah, and for those who haven't followed, obviously there was the news that came out on Friday that Jonathan Morgan, formerly of Sheffield United, that had been sacked, obviously, and therefore formerly Ellie's manager, had been sacked. Follows some very disturbing allegations, which came out in more detail over the weekend. Won't obviously go into it here, but obviously, from reading what the Maddie Cusack Foundation said, they hadn't even been told that it was happening. So they found out on social media as well, which is an absolute disgrace. But I quite understand if Ellie was wanting a bit of time just to clear her head and get her thoughts together and spend a bit of time focusing on herself. And obviously, I think the Maddie Cusack Foundation, so Maddie's parents, were down at Stourbridge. Stourbridge were hosting them on Sunday as well, so she might well have wanted to be there to see them and give them some moral support. So obviously, wish Ellie all the best if that is the case. And sure, as you say, Tom, well, we did miss her. She's a quality defender. But the big change, I suppose, Matt, which has been sort of running back towards, Beck in for Shan. Obviously, Shan dropped the ball against Stoke, and you could, I'll play Goalkeepers Union was partially at fault for the goal against Reading. Goalkeepers Union, I think the defence was as much to blame for that one as Shan. I think that was a 50-50 between the defence and Shan not talking. But she's been dropped for Beck. Thoughts on that?
I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? It's a ruthless business. You've made a mistake. You've made a couple of mistakes recently. You know, maybe a bit harsh to say it was entirely her fault at Reading. You know, it's communication across the back line. That happened with Burnley. The first game against Burnley earlier in the season. It's a bit ruthless, isn't it? And it's a little bit like, well, we've got to be picking up points here, but at the same time, then all you're doing is damaging somebody's confidence here. You know, an international footballer here who's kind of in and out of the Northern Ireland squad at the minute, certainly in the starting lineup. So I still personally, as a fan, believe Shan is our best keeper. But at the same time, I get that Beck never really did anything wrong initially when we got promoted from a tier four. And when she does have her chances, you know, she did well against Newcastle in the cup game last season, for example. So it's a tough one.
I mean, is that all it was that we had a keeper who knew Newcastle and played against them and therefore were, you know, sort of comfortable playing against them and therefore having that opportunity? You know, you got somebody who knows the score going up there. Is that all it could have been, perhaps, Tom?
So what did you say?
I was just saying because it just be that Beck, because Beck knew that because Beck had a good game against them the first time when we played them last year, that it was just purely psychological. We have a good, you know, keeper who's confident playing there, going up there and just sticking her in the net rather than necessarily dropping Shan for a mistake.
Yeah, maybe. You know, because she. I mean, remember when last time when was it the FA Cup? Was it? Or was it the League Cup? And when we played them in. I think she made a penalty save as well there, didn't she? And she had a cracking game. And so, yeah, maybe that played a part in it. But, you know, Beck's professional. You know, when you call upon her, she's always done well. I think, you know, I always remember that Forest game. I think when Shan was away and, you know, she come in and she played a world the other game, didn't she? So, you know, she's reliable. But I do agree with what Matt said. I think that Shan is our best keeper out of the two, but you can't knock Beth really. But yeah, it's down to Maka and choice really. But psychology maybe, but you know, Maka has to make these decisions and the tough decisions to make at times. But football's a ruthless game.
Yeah, I mean, we've always said, Matt, haven't we, that the choice of goalkeeper was always Maka's big toughest choice because he had two top quality goalkeepers, didn't he? Or doesn't he?
Yeah, and you know, we saw it last year where Shan was out the team for a little while and then comes back in, and you know, that fight for the number one shirt has always been there.
Yeah, and we just got the highlights on, and here's the first goal just build up. I mean, you know, it was a long ball up, and we have to say Emma Cross probably should have stuck with a marker a bit better than that one, shouldn't she?
Yeah, I'm not going to be as kind as you. I think that's terrible defending, really. You know, we've done quite well. We've been resilient in that first part of the game. You know, we could have even gone 1-0 up. You know, when we hit the woodwork first, and you know, maybe we're looking at a different game there. But you can't lose your player there like in that way. You know, fair enough if it's a quality finish or something, but to leave them exposed like that is terrible.
And here's the shot that, I mean, as you say, we hit the crossbar first. That hits the post. That if that had gone in, that would have been 1-1 at half time. And we'd have been sailing, you know, and we had another sort of chance there at a corner. Keeper gets hold of it. But we did well. We were in this game, even in the second half when it was still 1-0. We had opportunities, didn't we, Matt? It wasn't a thrashing at all in that, you know, it wasn't.
I'm really frustrated that they score right at the end because I think Newcastle deserved to win, but it's not a 3-0 game.
Yeah.
For anybody just looking, any Wolves fan just looking at the score there, you know, it looks like a thrashing. It looks like we've done terrible. And, you know, I'm not afraid to criticise the group. You know, there's moments within the game. I mean, we're just watching here where Amber kind of gets through on goal there. And, you know, she She needs that bit more belief there. She's got to shoot herself, you know, with her goal record. And
well, I was going to say, yeah.
Destiny fires over too. So between the two of them there, you know, we've got to do better in those situations.
Yeah, let's just watch that back. I mean, it's a long ball cleared out, headed back by the keeper. And Amber does what Amber does well. She muscles up past the defender, and she just doesn't look confident. And then you've got Beth Merrick in the middle, Dest out wide, and Amber sort of just takes it and sort of passes it across the Destiny skies over the top. It was really poor from the front, well, from Dest and Amber in that one.
It's not like us as well, and I think watching it back now, the only way I can explain it, I think, really is we know Newcastle are full time and their fitness levels are naturally going to be far superior to ours. And I think there's almost that fear of, as I'm running through on goal here, they're going to catch up with me and they're going to get to me here and I'm not going to be able to get the chance away. And I think that panic kind of sets in some of those moments.
Yeah. Just watching their second goal back, and it's Paige Gale again. It is Emma, obviously Emma stuck really closely to her. She gets clattered in that. Could it have been pulled back for the free kick and sort of, you know, and should it have stood? I mean, what's your view on that, Tom, having seen that footage?
I don't know. I think it's a soft one, isn't it? I don't think you can be given fouls for that. I think, you know, I think if it had been the other way and it had been a Wolves goal, I think we'd have wanted that goal to stand. So, I think it's too soft to give a foul for that.
I agree. I'd have been fuming if that was given against us. So, yeah. Unfortunately, I think it was a perfectly good goal.
Yeah. And we've just seen the third, which is a bit of a worldie, isn't it? I mean, it comes from a Wolves mistake in the pass back, not being cleared properly, but it is... It's a quality strike, isn't it? You're not going to do much with those ones, are you, Matt?
No, and I think as the game goes on there, it is that fitness again. You know, I keep mentioning it that comes to... I feel that that's the difference, really, between the teams. When you think of how Newcastle have recruited, you know, literally taking one of Portsmouth's best players who were top of the Southern League, you know, in the last couple of weeks, and they should probably be beating every team 10-0, really. And that's not me giving Saba grapes here. You know, I think Newcastle will win the league and they did deserve the win on the day. But it's there really isn't much, I don't think, between us, Newcastle, Burnley, Forest. And the 3-0 scoreline did flatter them.
Yeah, and Tom, I mean, is that all? Is that realistically what it was? Was it just that fitness versus us being, yeah, that loosely they're full-time, we're loosely semi-pro? Is that what, do you think that was the killer? Or was it... did we give them too much respect?
The quality, what they've got and what they brought in was a killer. You know, that they took their chances. And I'll go back to that one, what we've just seen about Amber. And I think if that's Amber on form, she smashes that and it's in the back of the net. And it's clear that from that she's obviously low on confidence, because any other time, we know what Amber's like, it's clinical and she'll finish. And she just didn't. She cut it back, and I think that's a difference. I think they've got quality. They've signed quality. They've brought in quality, and as I say, that's what investment gets you.
Yeah, and I think that is going to be something, isn't it, Matt? That we're going to have to look at. And I think we could do another whole podcast on investment. I mean, I was talking to the people in the Women's Football Fan Collective. Who did a lot of campaigning around sort of equal, increasing the prize money, and sort of formed out the back of Coventry United going under the first time round. And their sources were telling me that the sort of Newcastle budget is sort of somewhere between 1.5 and £2 million, and the Forest budget is sort of 750 to £1 million. I mean, those sort of figures, if Wolves is putting not half a million into it, I think that's being generous, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, it is. And listen, I mean, we've spoke about it many a times, and we can keep going over it and over in it and repeating ourselves. But at the end of the day, you know, we expected this at the beginning of the season. I think we spoke about it when we had that fans forum at the beginning of the season. It was brought up there. But Newcastle have put 2 million into it, their budget fully pro. Like Forest this year, far superior budget than us. Look, and now you look at the likes of Stoke, who are catching us, rapidly catching us up. They'll probably overtake us next season. We've got Derby. And there's always now going to be that team who are going to think, Newcastle's done it, I'm going to do it. Forest are going to be up there. Burnley are going to be putting more money into it next year. So how far are we going to go back? We have gone back. We're mid-table now, we're fifth. We've gone from winning the league to finishing a close second last year and taking Forest all the way. And we are regressing now. And how far have we got to go back for the board of this club to wake up and listen? Because the women's side of our clubs deserve better. We do. Because it's just hard to say of what's happening this season, because we spoke about it in our chat, but people are just going to look at this, blame Maka, blame the players. And we've seen it happen this weekend in the comments on X. Is it time for McNamara to go? No, it's not. What it is time for is the board of his club to invest in the women's side so Maka can take this team forward. Because I fear for us. I fear for us in the summer. Because I can see us losing some of our best players. And I can see us losing our coaching team. I really can. Because how long is Maka going to stick around now? Because he's going to see this and was regressing, right? How far is he going to wait before he walks away and takes on a better project, or somebody approaches him with a better project, with a better budget, where he can take them? Because we are a Premiership football club. We should be leading the way in women's football. We should not be holding back the way we are. And it's sad to see. And I think it goes back to what we were saying in the chat the other day about how did this club get the equality badges, what they've got, because they're not investing in their women's side. They're letting the women's side down. They're letting the girls down every single week. And it's not the girls' fault that the results have gone this season. It's quality. And next season is going to be exactly the same. And it's going to get worse because there's more teams that's going to put more money into it. So it'll be interesting to see whether the club actually do another fans forum this summer. And what they say in that fans forum, because if I still think that you can get out of this league on a next to no budget, then they're delusional. They're delusional. And Matt's speaking the truth, because we've seen it this season. We'll keep to seeing it. The days of getting out of this league on a shoestring have gone. Them days are over, and rightly so, because more people are investing in the women's game, and that's where we need to go with it. As you say, what is it? The money what they spend on agents' fees? 2 million? That's all we want. The money what they spend was 12. Was it 12 million what Mendes took? We're asking for 2 million to take Wolves fully pro. £2 million like Newcastle have got. It's not. We're not asking for tens of millions. We're asking for £2 million. £2 million, get out of this league. And we prove that we can compete with Championship clubs. We prove that against Reading. But this league is hard enough to get out of, and it's only going to get harder. We're going to get a more competitive Tier 3. And we're going to struggle. And before you know it, we'll end up like the Albion. And we'll go back. And like Albion, they haven't put any money in for years. And look how they fell back. And I don't want to see Wolves go for as far back as that. And I hope to God it doesn't. But we need investment. And if we don't get it, then the sad reality is that's where we're going to end up.
I can't argue with a word you said, Tom. You spoke so
absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, spot on, mate. Spot on. I think it is key. The investment is key. The club needs to wake up and smell the coffee, to put it bluntly. And
it's
I share
a wasted opportunity.
Yeah,
you've got to look at, you know, we were the trendsetters. We were so proud of that team winning the league, and people being jealous of the facilities we've got. And of course, there's still teams in our league that are going to be jealous of them, of course. But the way that the league strengthened, Maka has managed to build this team through his own connections, really, essentially. Mm. Not because we've been able to pay them the money that other teams pay, through his own connections. And like Tom said, there's only so long they're going to be here based on that, really. These championship level players aren't going to stick around to a fifth place team because we've fallen behind all the others. It's such a wasted opportunity. And I've said it privately before, but I may as well say it now. We're letting all the fireworks out. I think Jeff Shee was happy that day that we lost that playoff final, because it meant that he didn't have to put his hands in his pocket to fund us to become a semi-pro team in the Championship. And I personally feel they're quite happy with us just being in Tier 3. They might not want us to go lower. Tier 3, I think they're quite content with that. And that's a big, big shame.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not going to. Yeah, there's no. I try on this to put a slightly different view. There is no slightly different view on this. It is, that's it. It is an absolute crying shame. The board are letting the club, the players down. The board are letting the management down. And to be really clear, none of us are talking about sort of Laura in the academy or Jenna or Macca. We are talking about Matt Hobbs and Jeff Shee have let the players and staff down at this club. And it's a disgrace. And yeah, I think it's a real, real shame. And I think, you know, they'll all be there on Sunday, patting each other on the back because they've got Brighton, a WSL team. Mack will work miracles because he will do, because he's proud, because he will commit, and the players will give him 110%, and they'll pat themselves on the back because we'll hold Brighton to 2-0 or 3-1 or 1-0, whatever it is, and they'll all pat themselves on the back and go home. Whereas actually, we should be up in the Championship, beating the likes of Reading and Palace, etc., regularly, and pushing to be, you know, really challenging, really pushing Brighton, you know, getting into that WSL. You know, I'll take top half Palace, take top half Championship for the next few seasons, but pushing for it. You know, we should be pushing. We shouldn't be sitting here going, "Oh, fifth in the Tier 3 is enough." Just not good enough, Matt. Not good enough, Jeff. The fans were singing it at the Reading game. Are you watching, Matt Hobbs? And I hope you're watching on Sunday, because it was a disgrace that Matt Hobbs was not at what could have been the biggest game of the season for Wolves women at that game. He didn't need to go out and sun himself in the Middle East. He should have been at that game. He's director of football, sporting director, what they call it, this day of the week. He should have been there for that game. Guys, we're going to come to the end of this bit. We're going to be looking at the preview, and then we'll wrap up at the rest of the pod after that. But I think we all just need 2 minutes break to get off our soapboxes, and we'll see you after the break. Thank you very much, all of you. Welcome back to this edition of the Wolves Women podcast. And we're now looking ahead to Sunday's big game. It is the first of our fixtures against Albion teams that play in blue and white stripes. And it's the slightly better southern half that we got this first up in the FA Cup. Obviously, they're in the WSL. And last season, they actually got to the semi-finals of the FA Cup, losing to Man United. Someone had to, I suppose. They're currently sitting 11th in the WSL. And obviously, last time out, they actually lost to Manchester United, as it happened, 2-0 in the league on Sunday. But their progression to get this far in the FA Cup involved beating Luton. Lucky old Luton, 6-0. The big excitement, obviously, was the fact that their manager, suddenly realising that she was coming up against Wolves in a week or so's time, decided to chuck a hat out in and sort of quit Brighton on the Thursday before this last game and left them high and dry. But we're fortunate, actually, today to be joined by Duncan from She Girls, Brighton fans, Brighton Women's Football Club fans. So, Duncan, let's go straight into it. Mel Phillips ran away from the Wolves. That's the official line, isn't it, from the club?
It could well be, yeah. I mean, we haven't heard too much. So, you know, rumours are abound that she was scared to make the trip up to the Midlands, and that was it. That was a death knell for Mel Phillips at Brighton, yeah.
But in all seriousness, I mean, it wasn't looking great on the pitch for her, was it? You've done a bit of stats analysis, and it wasn't particularly great performance out there for her.
Yeah, I think a lot of people seem to be shocked initially when the decision was made. I think mainly because it didn't necessarily feel like it was something that was coming, that was in the pipeline of happening. The transfer window had just shut. So again, it seems odd timing for a manager to leave or be given the push. So it was very, very strange. And sort of amateur sleuthing that I've done around it, it appears to be that something happened after her press conference on Thursday and before they made the announcement, which was Thursday evening, so between lunchtime and the evening. And that led to her leaving the club. I'm not sure what the official term was. I'm not sure whether she officially resigned or whether she officially was let go, however you want to phrase it. But yeah, unexpected. But when you look deeper into the stats and stuff, you can see some worrying trends. And if it came to a sort of a Mexican standoff situation, she didn't necessarily have a lot to back up, you know, the words that she was putting out. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we said in sort of that bit of intro that you're currently 11th. I mean, comfortably 11th, but is it because Bristol are well behind you? But obviously, a few results going your way in that league, and you could be struggling. But your FA Cup performance, obviously, only played one game, 6-0 against Luton. It wasn't a surprise, was it, really?
No, not really. I think Luton are in the fifth tier, I want to say. Maybe, yeah, fifth tier. So obviously, part-time club, and they were very game. They actually defended very well, I thought, overall. But they had nothing really to go forward with. It was sort of batting down the hatches from minute number one, and they really impressed me for a fifth tier side. But obviously, you know, it's just one of those things. You could see as time went on, you know, the Brighton players still had the legs, still had the stamina to keep going and going and going, and obviously Luton. That was where they started to fall down a little bit, and obviously then the goals started to come, and that was that really.
And so therefore, getting lower tier opposition and officially the lowest club left in the competition was a positive draw for yourselves as Brighton fans then?
I suppose it depends which way you look at it. I mean, obviously, looking at it sort of in the cold light of day, obviously, you would think that facing lower league opposition would give you a better chance to go through. So obviously from that perspective, you know, without wishing to cast aspersions on Wolves in any way, shape or form, you know, would we rather have drawn like Man City or someone? Not really, because we probably would have gone out. So I think it's good from both sides. Perhaps you guys might have preferred a glamour tie. That's a question, a more of a glamorous tie, I should say. Perhaps that's a question for you guys, but yeah, I think there's pros and cons, and you know, it's always nice to be playing against a club that we don't normally, and obviously, you know, just hope it's a good game, really.
Yeah, Matt, Tom, one of you two want to come in on the would we have preferred a more glamorous side than the Sussex? Liz, go on, Matt.
Yeah, I think after having the Reading game, you know, I think a lot of us probably thought that might have been the end of the run there. So to get that cup upset, you know, you start dreaming of, I think there was a 25% chance, wasn't there, of having one of those, the big elite teams. So you do get quite confident that you might get that. But, you know, we had the game against West Ham last season, and now, you know, you're going to be, we used to play in tier three teams, like you've just said earlier, you know, part-time players, amateur players. So to get Vicky Lasada and players like that, you know, coming to our home ground, you can't complain, really, can you?
No, you can't, actually, can you? Well, and that leads really nicely into actually who are the players that you sort of rate and we should be looking out for those of our listeners who aren't Brighton aficionados. Who should we be looking out for in your team, Duncan?
I'd say number one up front, Elizabeth Turland, definitely. She's, I think, third top scorer in the WSL at the moment. Certainly around that level. I think she's got 9 so far this season. If she gets a chance, she'll take it. It's giving her the chance in the first place that's been some of the problems. So, yep, definitely Elizabeth Turland. Katie Robinson, who's been in and around the England squad, obviously went to the World Cup, was unfortunately one of the sort of several players who didn't actually get a kick of the ball out there, but she certainly, you know, was able to benefit from the experience. Her form's been a little bit down this season, I would say, but you know, she's very, very dangerous. She's the one who sort of drives the ball down the wing, and can get the balls into the box for Turland. So those two as a connection. And I'd probably say, as we've had a striker and a midfielder, I'll put forward Maria Torres Dottir in defence. the Iron Lady, I think of her as. I don't know why, but it's that sort of Scandinavian sort of, you know, warrior look to her almost. But she's so soft-spoken and such a lovely person. But she looks like she'd head a brick away if it came in as a cross. So, You know, that's always handy. And we've got Baggers in goal, Sophie Bagley, and you know, she's been outstanding this season for us, saved our behinds on many occasions. So yeah, I'd say those four are the ones to look out for in main. You know, you might see a couple of youngsters come out as well that from the under-19s. Our under-19s have been very good of late. One, I think, National Cup recently. So some of those are starting to get some play too. So there's obviously some big names. But yeah, it'd be nice if a couple of the youngsters got a game too.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you've got Villa coming up in the Conti Cup midweek, and then Liverpool the week after us. Well, is it likely that Brighton will rotate some of their sort of their starting 11 out and sort of put in for want of better terminology, a weakened 11?
That's a very good question, actually. I don't really know if there's enough depth in the squad to field a weakened 11. I would say it's going to be some variation of what, you know, the players that we would normally use. They might just look to give some of the veterans, I would suggest, maybe a little bit of maybe give them a game off, put them on the bench and maybe bring them on if needed. But in general, in the cup competitions, we've played a pretty strong 11. And I do think that's one area where it can be morale boosting if you're not doing fantastically well in the WSL. You know, a cup run can sometimes be the impetus you need to sort of improve results in the WSL. So I think there will be some rotation, and there might be one or two players who you think, oh, you know, they normally play or whatever. But I think in general, it'll be a fairly strong 11.
Yeah, of course, the flip side of that is if we do the magical thing and dump you out of the cup, it could obviously upset your season for some time to come as well. I mean, what formation did Brighton play? You know, the traditional 4-4-2, or is it a more fluid 4-3-3, or what do you think? What would you say?
Under Mel Phillips, it was one of these adaptable formations where sometimes it would be five at the back, and then sometimes that would become three at the back with five in midfield. But truthfully, it wasn't really working very well. I think everyone could see what they were trying to do. But it just wasn't really coming off. It was, you know, people were getting confused and pulled out of position and things like that. So I think under the sort of interim manager, he'll probably try and simplify that. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a sort of 4-4-1-1, you know, like a 4-4-2, but we very rarely, and neither do a lot of teams, play two strikers anymore. But you could see someone off the striker, maybe someone like Lee Gwin-min, someone who's used to getting in and around the box, but is not necessarily maybe an out-and-out striker. If not, then it will be five at the back with wing-backs. That will be the other option. And as I say, that may be a little bit too complicated for this game, without willing to sort of, you know, without oversimplifying it. I think they might just go, well, who are our best players? Let's get them all on the pitch. Let's put them in a formation they understand, and, you know, let's try and win some games, and we'll worry about the rest when it comes down to it. Because before we were worrying about the rest, that's when, you know, results weren't going our way. So I do think certainly under the interim manager, it'll be simple as possible. Know where you're playing, know your role, as it were, and you know, stick to it and do what you're good at, sort of thing. So yeah, I would have thought 5-3-2 with wing backs, or a sort of 4-4-1-1, something like that.
Yeah, Tom, I mean, we'd probably prefer that five at the back, wouldn't we? Because it's what we're used to playing, so we can defend against it. We would have practiced in training, wouldn't we, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the formation what Macca will go for. So obviously, we know the threat what Brighton have got. You know, with WSL team, we've got some quality in there. And for us, I think it's just about, you know, keeping it really tight at the back and then just trying to catch them on the counter. And I think that'll be the way that Macca goes, with definitely with a five at the back.
Yeah, so we could quite easily see Matt, couldn't we? Two banks of five at the back and playing around in midfield quite happily, watching the ball and no goals.
That's it. I think we've got to emulate that West Ham performance from last season, really. You know, accept that you've got a superior team here, sit back, try to hit him on the counter, you know, and that's what worked for us last year. And, you know, Duncan, you're talking about some of the veterans might be on the bench, you know, that's what happened for West Ham last season, and they had to bring them all on, didn't they? Because it was still 0-0 in the 75th minute. So hopefully we'll see a repeat of that, really. And the longer we can keep it at 0-0, the better chance we're going to have. And I remember Macca said last year, it was all about playing the game in kind of 10-minute contests, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you get through that first 10, then into the next 10, then the next 10. And the more the game goes on, the more belief we'll have. So as long as we kind of shut up shop straight away, don't concede earlier on, you know, we've got that small chance.
Yeah. Duncan, are any of your players good at penalties? Are you looking forward to a nice shootout if we can keep it tight all the way for 120 minutes?
That's a very good question. We actually haven't won a penalty in the WSL this season, so I don't even know who our penalty taker is.
I'm just looking at your Conti Cup scores as well, because I think you've either won or lost all your Conti Cup games, haven't you?
So I think we won them all. Although we did have two Championship teams, I think, did we? Or two WSL. I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure we won all of them. But one of them was a game against the aforementioned West Ham where they rested all their players, a bit like against you guys last season. They actually beat us in the league when they had their full team out. So it was a welcome payback, but I'd rather have had the 3 points.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, I'm not too sure about penalties. I'd rather avoid them, you know. Just never know.
Oh, I'm looking forward to a nice penalty shootout in front of the Wolves fans. That'll be more smashing it down to win it. Will be a pleasant sight, wouldn't it, Matt?
I think we're all hoping your Conti Cup game goes the full distance to penalties a few days before as well, so you're a little bit worse for wear before you play us.
You'll be fine. It's the only time we'll be cheering on Villa is on Wednesday night. So yeah,
that's a point. Yeah, that's a good point.
Nice. Keep going, Villa. 120 minutes, taking to penalties. Miss all the penalties. Keep going. We want 12 penalties each. I mean, Dunk, in all seriousness, any questions for Wolves fans? Obviously, because you Brighton fans, you know, you said it yourself, haven't played us. I don't think we've ever played Brighton, if I remember rightly, from what the history I've read. So it'll be a brand new team, brand new occasion for yourselves. Any questions that you might have for us?
Yeah, I can probably come up with a few. Yeah. how often or how likely is it going forward that you guys would have games at Molineux? Is that something in the pipeline, or would you have to reach sort of a certain tier, do you think, to play games there, or what's the situation with playing at the men's ground, as it were?
Yeah, Tom, do you want to answer that one?
Yeah, so at the minute, we usually play like one game there a year, which is near the end of the season. So obviously, with us playing on Sunday and then with a lot of men's teams being on Sunday as well at Molineux. So really, we only get to play there once. And that's why we used to play in the city centre in CKW, then obviously moving to Telford. But yeah, I think it's something which in the future, it won't be happening yet. I don't think it'll happen in Tier 3 that we'll play every single game there. Although we would love that. I think it's going to take for us to get to the WSL level, I think, for us to play every single game there.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. We were lucky last season. We had one league game there, and then we got to our County Cup final, therefore Molineux was technically the neutral venue for the County Cup final, announced before. Well, actually, it was announced after we knew the finalists, but it was one of those where it had been agreed before the final pair, so it was technically meant to be a neutral venue. So it was a nice treat to play there twice last season, but yeah, it's just that once a season. Go on. Anything else, mate? Yeah. Go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's quite interesting because I think Brighton will only play one game at the American Express Stadium this season, to be honest with you. You know, we're always asking for more, but we get various reasons from the club. Some I think are more legitimate than others about why they won't play more games there. And you know, we did a fan survey recently, and pretty much everyone who responded said that, you know, the actual key thing to getting more fans and having more fans involved and all that sort of thing, all the good stuff to do with the club, is really down to playing in Brighton and Hove as opposed to Crawley, where we play now, which I think is about 20 miles away. You know, there's a lot of people who live in Brighton city centre and stuff, as I guess you guys will have the same, who need to use public transport and stuff. And, you know, the public transport links to Crawley are atrocious. There's no like bus from the station that goes to the ground, all that sort of thing. So it's interesting to sort of hear. That's one of the things I always like to know from other teams is what's the sort of plan going forward in terms of growing the fan base. And, you know, at a certain point, you may outgrow the current sort of stadium, and then obviously what the plan is. So no, that's really useful to know.
Go on, Matt. Come on in.
I think it's an interesting debate as well, isn't it? Because me personally, and I know a few others that agree, I'd hate it to be that all of our games were played at the main stadium, because you look at a team like Leicester, and I've been to some of Leicester's WSL games, and it's just soulless, you know. And I've been to Villa games when they've been at Villa Park compared to the games at the Beskar, and the atmosphere is so much better in those smaller grounds. And I think it was Jess Carter that said that actually she doesn't like the games at Stamford Bridge compared to the King's Meadow when they can almost sell it out. So it's that balance of playing, like you said, in the city at the main stadium to attract new fans. But I think unless you're a team like Arsenal, who are getting big attendances at the Emirates, it's something you've got to be careful of how much you do it. And I think Blues are another team, aren't they? They play all the games at St Andrews, yeah. And they're just not getting the crowds to match it. So I think until you've got the confidence of getting the crowds, it's something I think teams have to be careful with.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're really lucky as well, actually, to be fair. The new Buck's Head is a good state. It's not a football ground. It's a football stadium. It is designed mm-hmm. for. It was built and purpose built for the conference level. So, it's seating all on one side of the pitch, a couple of terraces at either end. But it's designed as a stadium, so it feels like you're going to a proper football match rather than you're going into a proper stadium rather than going into. Take Reading where we played last time. Where we played Aldershot's ground, where it was a couple of rickety stands, and that's about it. It's the difference there. So I think we'll get and think 6,000, just over 6,000 is the capacity at the new Buck's Head. So we've got space to grow in there as well. I don't know. Certainly, there was a conversation around this game, whether this game should be at the Molineux or should be at the new Buck's Head. And I think once people started to understand that actually, one, you've got the logistics, because obviously the men are at home on Saturday against Brentford, but then you've got the girls know the pitch, know the setup, know everything's home for them, and then we'll be right on top of you. We're really close to the pitch in the new Buck's Head, so therefore, with thousand odd fans in there generating a lot of noise and atmosphere, it'll be quite an intimidating atmosphere for your players. Cheering on ours, and I know that they talked about when they played Reading, there was only 150 people there, 100 of them were Wolves fans, but they could hear us and it helped them get through those, those last 10 minutes to win the game. So I think it works in our advantage to have the game at New Buck's Head rather than at the Molineux, where you'd have, even if you sold 10,000 fans in a 30,000 seat stadium, set back from the pitch, just be lost.
Absolutely.
So that's part of the reason why I think it works. I think we'll keep those games, certainly until, as Matt says, until you sort of guarantee that you're going to get that 15,000 plus mark, then it's keep them at the new Buck's Head.
Yeah, I mean, I don't actually think, Crawley are obviously, I think they're League Two. Their ground is okay. One of our main sort of issues with it is they play in red, which is not a traditional Brighton colour. So although we do have like a third kit that's red at the moment, crimson or something at the moment. But if that was closer to Brighton and Hove, I think we'd probably, I don't know how far the new Buck's Head is from sort of Molineux as the crow flies, but
it's not far. It's probably similar to sort of to the 10 to 20 mile range. But I think the difference is it's on the M54.
So it's dead easy to get to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And public transport, I drive because I come up from Cambridgeshire, but the daft thing was it's further for me to travel to, but it's easier and quicker for me to get to than it was central Wolverhampton because it's straight off on the M54. So the police aren't listening to this, so it's fine. I can do Cambridgeshire. I can do North Cambridgeshire, so just south of Peterborough, to Telford in an hour and 45 minutes on a Sunday afternoon. So...
it's not too bad.
Yeah,
I mean, we ultimately, it's been floated out there by our you know, the CEO of Brighton as a whole, that we're looking to build the first sort of purpose-built women's stadium. So if that actually comes to fruition, that would be fantastic, because obviously, you know, they it would be a lower capacity than the Amex, definitely. But I think we can definitely, we were getting about sort of 6,000-7,000 at the Amex when we were playing there. So it was sort of, they'd only open like the lower bowl on one side. So I definitely, yeah, I can empathize about, yeah, having a certain, you know, a lower amount of spectators in the stadium. I think it was just, you know, the fact that it's so easy to get to from Brighton and Hove compared to Crawley. But yeah, I mean, if we can achieve that goal of a specific women's stadium within the boundaries of Brighton and Hove, and we stay in the WSL and are competitive, then I think we could be up there at least 5,000 a week, and, you know, for the bigger games, probably more like 10, especially, you know, we sold out Crawley for the first time ever, I think, for a women's game. But it must be said that that was because I think Arsenal brought about 2,000 supporters. It's probably not that far for Arsenal supporters, to be honest with you, because Crawley is up towards London.
Yeah.
So that obviously massively helped that figure. But I know we could do more if it was in Brighton and there was more promotion and things like that. So it's always just looking at the next thing, isn't it? What can you do? So, yeah.
Well, Matt, in you come, Max.
I was just going to say, I think those purpose-built stadiums for the women's team, that's the way forward, isn't it? You know, it can obviously link in the men's academy teams as well, because they're always having to rent a stadium too. So that's the way forward. And I think the men's Premier League teams, really, they've not really got the excuse not to do that. You know, you were touching on the colours, they're not matching anything. You know, all that will fall into place, won't it, if you're getting that purpose-built stadium. So I'd love Wolves to do that. And it's brilliant that Brighton are doing it. We know Man City have got that, and that works really nicely for them too. So, yeah, hopefully it's something we'll see more and more teams do.
Definitely.
You mentioned promotion of the club, et cetera, and the games. I mean, how much do Brighton as a team do for, or as a club, do to promote the team? Because it's something we moan about on this pod, about sort of the level of promotion of the women's team by the club. How much does Brighton do?
Yeah, I mean, I was doing a little bit of research today, and I probably found a similar thing to, you know, you can wish to disagree or agree, but I was looking for the women's team. I wanted to watch some of your highlights and things, but obviously if you go on anything to do with Wolves, it's quotes from the men's players. It's, you know, like I found it, not a problem, you know, like I did find it, you know, the menus are clear and everything like that, but it's obviously full bore on the men's team, really. And Brighton are very much the same. You know, the men's games are pumped out right, left and centre. There's, you know, this out in the press, there's the press conferences, there's all this sort of thing. And the women's is, if you follow the women like on X or Instagram, you'll get a fair amount of content. But there never seems to be anything external really going on with either other elements of the club. So the men's team like promoting the women's team. We had a game against Bristol City, which was a relegation six-pointer, really. And the men were playing on the Monday, the women were playing on the Sunday. So there was no weekend game for the men. And that's a prime example of, you know, can the men's team not tweet out, you know, there's a women's game on this weekend. If you can't make the Monday night fixture, go down, support, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing. It's just radio silence, you know. Maybe let people bring in, you know, if someone's never been before, let people bring them in for a pound, or, you know, no season ticket holder is bothered about things like that. You know, they're not going to be grumbling about the fact that they paid £5 or £6. It doesn't matter. It's about the betterment of the club and building the fan base, you know. So I'm all about those things. And that was one of the things. She Goals is quite young. I only started it September, I think, was when I sort of first had the sort of idea for it. It was just because I couldn't find anything beyond what the club was putting out, talking about the women's team. I couldn't find anything else. No podcast. You know, you guys are doing a fantastic job, you know, with the Wolves Women podcast. But we didn't have one. We didn't have a website. We didn't have news. We didn't have anything, really. Just whatever the club pumped out from the women's feed, and that was it. And I sort of wanted to be a bit of an agent of change in that, even if it was me sort of kicking them up the backside a little bit to say, well, you know, why should I have to say that we should do this? You should just be doing it, you know. And weirdly, every now and again, I do something or I put something out there, and then suddenly the club do something very similar. And I'm not saying that they're watching what I'm doing, but I do think, you know, sometimes you need someone there to say, hold on a minute, you know, what actually are you doing? Oh, well, do you know, when we look at it, we're not actually really doing anything. So, you know, if you've got someone there external saying, well, why, and you haven't really got a good answer, then, you know, sometimes things, you know, things get moved along a bit quicker. So they are getting better. They are listening a bit more. And I've been in conversation with the club, and there's a couple of representatives from like the sort of club-wide fan advisory board who are involved with the women. One of the people on the board is actually a former Albion player, so she's very invested in the women's team. And we are starting to have a lot more conversations with the actual club, rather than just being told, oh, well, we might try that. Or, you know, oh, well, we've got enough good ideas, thanks very much, and all this sort of thing. You know, they're starting to actually listen, and that's the key, is at least getting in there, getting that relationship. And you know, they can say no if they want, but at least there's some of us that are trying, so...
Yeah, I don't know whether Tom, whether it's disheartening to hear that Brighton, you know, a WSL team are performing similar to Wolves, or it's positive, if that's the right phraseology, to say that Wolves are performing as well as Brighton. What's your sort of quick take on that, Tom?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? But I think what it does prove is that I think women's team as a whole, not just in, doesn't matter what division you're in, needs to improve on the social media part of things and getting stuff out, because as Duncan just says, you know, it's a similar to Wolves. A lot of stuff gets pumped out on the men's, but women's side, unless you follow them on X or on Facebook, you never get to see it. Because it's not very often that even Wolves cross share on the main accounts. So yeah, what it does prove is that as a whole, women's football needs to do a lot better.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, Dunk, this brings us to the key moments of this conversation. Your score prediction for Sunday, and don't worry, if you get it right and Wolves do win, which I'm sure is what you're going to predict, we'll you know, won't clip it out and share it or anything. So don't worry.
Well, have no fear. I am predicting a Brighton win, but I, you know, like I said, I've been doing my research, and I think you guys might get a goal against us. I don't know whether that's a controversial opinion. Brighton fans may agree or disagree, but we look a little bit shaky down the left. We did, especially against Man United on the weekend, and I've been looking at Destiny Toussaint. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Toussaint. Unless you're Geordie, where it's not Toussaint, it's Toussaint or something. But yeah, no, it's Toussaint. Toussaint.
Yeah, she looks handy on the wing. And I'll tell you what's refreshing. The players I noted down, I looked on the club website and I looked at their bios, and they're nearly all the players who have either played a lot for Wolves or have come from other good, you know, good teams. So I've also said Tammy George. She looks very good.
Yeah.
In midfield, is she sort of a centre mid normally?
Yeah, centre mid.
Yeah,
her versus Lozada is the battle we're looking forward to.
Yeah, that sounds spot on. That'll be an interesting one. Merrick, with she puts in good balls from the wing, and Brighton
yeah,
have
yeah,
not
Beth
been
Merrick,
good.
Yeah,
yeah, Brighton have not been great with set pieces, and so set pieces. I'm going Morfitt, I think, is your set piece. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, they're definitely areas where you know, where Brighton could be exploited. Yeah, balls into the box, set pieces, corners, that sort of thing. Worst record in the WSL for goals conceded from set pieces, you know, dead ball situations and stuff. And I actually think the stats are a bit worse, but I think there's a couple that ping pong around the box before they went in, so they probably don't count. But yeah, so. Yeah, really good. Really, I was really impressed by what I saw. The Newcastle highlights weren't up as of yet, so I didn't see that game. So we won't talk about that one.
Yeah,
So yeah, I'm gonna go 3-1.
3-1.
3-1 to Brighton.
There you go.
Yeah.
There we go. We'll come back to you if we beat you. Matt, quick one for
You
you.
can.
What's your score prediction?
I had 3-1 in my head as well. I'm gonna go 3-1 Brighton, which will be an achievement, really. You know, a bit like the West Ham game, you know, we were quite positive after that. So, and like you've said, to get a goal as well, that'd be quite memorable for our players.
Tom?
It's going to be tough. We know it's going to be tough. I'm going to go optimistic and I'm going to say we're going to keep it tight at the back. We're going to hit them on the counter and win 1-0.
Do you know what, Tom? I had that as well. I think we're gonna bluntly, we're gonna shit house a 1-0 win and take it and get into the quarterfinals. And I tell you what, the party afterwards will be worth it. Brilliant. Duncan, do you want to just quickly give us your socials so people can follow you, obviously, on X and Insta and whatever else you're on?
Yeah, it's pretty much at She Goals, so SHEGULLS. That's on X and Instagram. That's mainly where we are, mainly on X specifically. And SheGoals.com, we have match reports and a bit of women's football in general on there. So there'll be a nice report up for the Wolves game once it happens. Hopefully my keyboard won't be stained with my tears of sadness at going out. So
Well, thank you very much, mate, and welcome, and we'll catch you, I'm sure, again at some point. Hopefully, we'll meet in the WSL in a couple of seasons' time, if not in the cup again. Thank you very much, and we'll carry on with the show after this. Welcome back to this final part of the Wolves Women podcast. After a very passionate first half and an interesting deep dive into Brighton in the second half, let's just pick up those final bits and pieces that we want to discuss happened over the last couple of weeks since we last spoke. The reserves. Let's start with the reserves. Two highly entertaining games by the looks of it. First of all, in the quarterfinal of the Reserves League Cup, they beat Newcastle, who are top currently of the North. Reserves 2-1 with Anya Denham getting both goals, and Bournemouth have been drawn Bournemouth at home in the semi-finals on the 25th of February. Matt, that's the same day as we've got Feds at home for the first, the first team we've got Feds at home. Should the club look to do a bit of a double header at the New Bucks Head, get the reserves on, let's say 1 till 3, and then the first team at 4 till 6, make a bit of a song and dance about it?
Yeah, I suppose so, possibly. I don't think it's something they've considered on that front, have they, in the past? You know, they've mentioned before about Wolves Men Academy games being linked with the women's ones and trying to kind of do a double header in that way, but I guess it's something they could consider for the women's.
Yeah, I just think it'd be nice, just obviously with it being Feds are only an hour or so up the road, aren't they, Tom? So it's kicking off a bit later and finishing a little bit later. It's not too bad for them heading back, and it gives the reserves a chance to play at the New Bucks Head rather than at Compton. It'd be a nice reward for them, isn't it, I suppose, getting that chance to play at in the big stadium.
Yeah, definitely something which, you know, the club can look at going forward. I don't know whether they do it this time or not, but I think it's something to definitely look at going forward. I think that it gives them experience of playing in front of a crowd because, you know, I don't know how many the play in front of it at the training ground. I don't, or unless I'd let any fans in at all there. Yeah, it'd be interesting, and it gives them experience, as I say, you know, playing in front of, and know what it's like to be playing in front of crowds and to come into the first team, which obviously we hope they do in the future, because that's the whole point of an academy. So yeah, something hopefully that Wolves will consider in the future, and it's, you know, something which I'll be open to attending. So yeah.
Just on the attendance point, I think last time I looked, they had 100 fans at one of the reserves games, more than a West Bromwich Albion first team game at the same around the same time as well. But there you go. I couldn't possibly make any derogatory remarks about West Brom attendances, could I,
Well,
Matt?
just remember West Brom games have under 14s games as the warm-up.
Not even, and let's be really clear, not even West Brom under 14s. It was somebody else's under 14s that was the warm up.
Yeah.
At least we'd have our own team doing the warm up for us. Now, I think it'd be good to see. I think if they made it two games for the price of one, get in early, support the reserves, stay on, and you could do sort of some entertainment or something. The reserves can do meet and greets along the edge. But yeah, the fans that are there whilst the first teams are warming up, I think it'd be something that the club should look at if possible. Might not be logistically possible this time though. And then on Sunday, they drew 4-4 at Stoke. Coming back from 4-2 down, apparently talking to various people who were there, it was a highly entertaining game. And it was that girl again. Two goals from Anya Denham. That's four goals in two games for her. And then one each from Grace Gregory and Poppy Kendrick-Jones. Just quickly on Anya, obviously she was brought in initially to go into the reserves, Matt, and then she sort of got moved back into, she got moved very rapidly up into the first team, as discussed. But I think she's been limited game time, hasn't she? So I think it's good for her to be back playing regularly in the reserves.
I think it's exactly what we expected from her, really. You know, that she's training with the first team, she's in and around there, getting some useful minutes. But given her age, you know, and her experience, it's similar to what we've seen with the Wolf men team, where we've got a few players training with the first team, but predominantly then going to go on and play with the academy and the reserve. So it's, I think that's probably the best option for her right now, rather than kind of just getting splinters on the bench.
Yeah, no, definitely. And she seems to be getting the goals in as well there as well, which is good for her. Gets confidence up and makes sure that she is putting stuff into the back of the net, which is, it breeds, you get used to it, don't you? If you're scoring goals, it becomes almost natural, doesn't it? Once you just roll out and wherever you play. I think it's positive, isn't it? Isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, it is. And, we know Anya's got quality. We've seen it when she made her debut in the first team with her first touch, didn't she? And she scored that goal. So she definitely got quality. I think, as you say, we expected it. She expected to be in and out of the first team. She's very young, so obviously you don't want to put too much pressure on her at a young age. So, yeah, she's definitely a quality player, and I think she's one that, we will be seeing much more of it in the first team in the 2 years to come. So, yeah, hopefully that she can progress, because it seems like this new manager who's took on the reserves has taken off from where Tom Warren left off, and she's doing well with them. So, yeah, credit to the reserves.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the reserves are playing at home on Sunday the 11th against Derby, who are currently sitting top of the league. Talking of youngsters, obviously, we saw Sky Owen return to the fold, having come back off loan at Khalsa. I mean, she's done exceptionally well at Khalsa. I mean, I'm just going to check, make sure I quote this correctly. 11 goals and 5 assists in 19 games last season. And then, she's put in a few more this season as well. Netted a further 7 goals for them this season. I mean, Matt, we saw a bit of around her. She made a debut last season for us against Loughborough, didn't she? And she certainly seems to be sort of living up to a bit of expectation there and getting it stuck in.
Yeah, like you just said, she came on that day, I think still 16 at the time, if I remember rightly, and she looked full of confidence, that didn't show at all. And the loan move has obviously done her really good. It was the right decision for her, rather than sitting on the bench behind Amber. But I think with the league season essentially being over, there's an admission there that we're obviously far out of the title race. What's the point in kind of delaying that transition for her, really, and for our transition as a team going into the next season? So it's good to bring her back into the fold and see what she can give us.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tom, do you think it's more she's come back because it's just injury concerns around the front line, or is it just to freshen up that attack and put competitive pressure on our front line to sort of make sure that their people are sort of firing on all cylinders in the front and aren't getting complacent?
Yeah, I think obviously he's brought her back. Obviously, with the lack of goals that we've got currently up front, I think, we sort of spoke about it there about Amber's lack of confidence in the Newcastle game there. So, she's a different option, and hopefully she can put pressure on Amber and the other forwards. But what I will say is it reminds me a bit of the Katie Johnson one when we brought KJ back midway through the year. So hopefully, she can do what KJ did and cement a place in this team. But as I say, we're out of the title race now. That's over and done with. So what better time to bring her back in and give her game time in the first team? And you know, see where she goes from there. But yeah, I welcome her back, and I think she's going to be a very special talent for us in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, I saw her in the posh pre-season friendly where you could see the raw talent there. She just needed that. She needed regular game time. So she needed that loan or to be guaranteed to be coming on for sort of 30 minutes in the first team every game. And we couldn't guarantee her that. So it was good that she got that loan. And I think it's credit to Kalsa as well. They've been able to work with her and work with Wolves to get the best out of her and sort of give her that opportunity. And she's obviously flourished there as well. So credit to Grasshopper Kalsa. Talking of sort of new players in and around the squad, we announced a signing on the day after the men's deadline day. That must have set a few hairs running when suddenly transfer news was coming through after that. Leila Banaras has joined on a dual signing from Blues. I mean, Matt, you shared it in our group chat. Sky News tweeting it out. I mean, when did we ever have Wolves women being tweeted out on Sky News?
I had to look at it twice. I was like, really? I mean, obviously, we'd all saw the signing announced by Wolves, but I was like, hey? I was like, is this a legitimate account? Or is this like Nick's just started a new page to try to spread the news or what? But yeah, it was quite crazy, really. And I know there's obviously she's been in the news in the past for different things she's done. And she's very highly thought of, isn't she? And I saw Carla Ward said she was an outstanding prospect when she was in the Blue setup. So, you know, again, very young. Whether she'll have a big impact with us immediately, who knows? And hopefully it's a player that we'll be able to keep beyond the end of the season if Macca likes the look of her.
Yeah, I mean, Tom, obviously she's been brought in. The sort of the official explanation was brought in because we've lost H. And Brooke Cairns has also departed us, which we'll touch on in a second, to give us that competition in midfield. But I think it says something about her talent that she's, you know, 16, 17. She's been brought in with that sort of mantle of competition to compete and force her way and replace H, isn't it? It says something about her.
Yeah, it does. Obviously, I don't really know too much about her, to be honest. But everything I've seen about her, everyone seems to be raving about her and the quality that she's got. So she's definitely highly rated and she's highly thought of. So I want to see more of her in the coming weeks, and hopefully, yeah, it's one where hopefully Macca can keep going into next summer. And which is what I think as well. I think Wolves should be doing more of this as well in getting dual signings from Championship and WSL teams, because you know we've seen that link up with Burnley, ain't we? With Man United, their link up with them. So they're getting a few, and it's working out for them. And it is. So I want to see more of that. Maybe we could get into a partnership at some time with Birmingham City and say, well, here, you know, you manage down the road from us. We'll sign some of your younger talents, give them a chance at Wolves, give them that first team experience. And I think that's what we should be doing, linking up with these clubs more. So hopefully that will continue.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to Craig Hadley, who's involved with Blues Women, a fan group. And he's also a Midlands women's football expert and sort of fountain of knowledge on all things Midlands women. So real sort of, you know, respected views. And the feedback he gave me was that she played right back when she first came through at the club, but has been playing central midfield too in recent seasons for the academy. As you said, Matt, she's talented and got a lot of admirers in the media. And she did create a meal plan for during Ramadan, you know, so it helps other sort of South Asian origin players, when they were going through Ramadan and sort of go, you know, that fasting, making sure they're balancing off sport with their religious commitments. And he was saying to me that he was wanting her to see good game time, get more game time. And he thinks she'll break into the Blues team, the first team in a few years. And obviously she's been knocking around that squad for the last sort of 18 months. So I think we've got a real talent in our hands there, haven't we, Tom?
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, it's how you manage her as well. She's young. But yeah, I'm all for it. You know, especially losing H, I think that was a massive loss for us at the beginning of the season. And we never really replaced it, did we? We haven't got that kind of option to replace her with, and we've had some of Holmes out injured as well. So, you know, I mean, with some of being missing as well, that's, you know, a big loss in this Wolves side. So if she can replace that and have that bit of quality. And I want to see a link up with Tammy George as well. What that link up is going to be with Tammy. So for me, I'm all for it. And hopefully, you know, we can she can progress here. But I want to keep her here more than just for this last few months of the season. And hopefully, we can do that if she impresses.
Yeah. Not sure whether she'll be available for week on Sunday again, where we play in the County Cup, because I just had a quick look to see whether she played in the Blues team when they played West Brom, but it's not listed any of their players, unfortunately, so can't tell. But hopefully we'll see a bit of a around the team over the next couple of weeks. And as we sort of alluded to there, Brooke Cairns has departed. I mean, Mark, we didn't really see much of her. It was a short-term deal, always announced as a short-term deal. 5 appearances from the bench. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, like you said, we didn't really get to see a lot of her, so it's tough to kind of get that observation on how well she did. You know, she was brought in as extra depth. I think we were a little bit excited, you know, coming from West Ham there. But yeah, we didn't really get to see enough of her there. But, you know, all the best for her going forward.
Yeah, no, definitely. Before we sort of do player of the month for January, we'll just wrap up and say congratulations to Khalsa, in particular Joseph Smith and Hannah Sparks, on beating Stoke and getting to the Staffordshire County Cup final. They'll be playing Leek in April at some point. And Tom, it means there'll be definitely a new name on the Staffordshire County Cup. I think that's welcome in itself, but it's great that our players are helping Khalsa in success, getting success in that competition, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's a great opportunity for them to get some silverware on the name. So it's great to see the younglings doing well. And, you know, you've got to credit Sky Owen as part of that as well, because she was a massive part of their journey as well this season, even though obviously she won't be playing in the final now. But, you know, she was a massive part of them. So, yeah, it's great to see. And, you know, it's always good for you to see them beat the Stoke in it. So
well,
I think
yeah,
they would come this season after results we've had. It's we take joy in that defeat.
It was a result I was keeping an eye out for, and watch. I was following on Sunday and did cheer when Khalsa did win that one, because I was really pleased for them to beat Stoke and for our girls to get that chance to get a final. And fingers crossed, we'll have Wolves players winning the Staffordshire and the Birmingham County Cups this season. So there we go. Gents, let's move on to player of the month. We've had a couple of really poor results this month, and realistically, only one game of players really stood out. I think, I mean, partially that's because of Reading deciding to poison all our players. But we'll just, so we've only got 3 players realistically. We'll just run through them. Matt, we'll start with yourself. Destiny Toussaint.
Yeah, Destiny. Like you just said, there 2 poor results, but then 1 absolutely outstanding performance for the whole team. You could have nominated the whole team just for that game, couldn't you? But Destiny's in there purely for that that winner against Reading. You know, the limbs she sent us into going in that right at the end of that game against Reading. You know, it's a memory that they're going to have and a memory that we're going to have for a long time. So that's why Destiny's in there.
Tom, Beth Merrick.
Yeah, you know what Beth brings to the team, and I think she's at times this season she's been absolutely excellent. You know, and that link up with the 2 Beths down that side has been amazing. So we know what Beth brings, yeah, that bit of quality, and you know, yeah, deserving to be there.
Yeah, and finally, the sort of the 3rd one is Ellie Wilson, and I think, you know, sort of a crucial goal in that Stoke game, just about kept the flames of our title challenge alive, but also the setup for the winning goal against Reading. But also, to be fair to her, she's been misconsistent for the last, you know, all season realistically. Absolute rock in defence. So yeah, so Ellie Wilson as well is nominated. So we'll put the vote out shortly, and please do get voting on that when it comes out. Gents, it's been an emotional ride, roller coaster ride, this pod. But have we missed anything that we ought to be looking out for, Matt?
No, I think it's about 5 hours long, isn't it?
Just over an hour, I think. Just Tom, anything for yourself?
No, I think we've said everything what needed to be said today.
Yeah. One final thing. Let's get, you know, Sunday. We've had our rant about the board, but Sunday it's about the girls. It's about getting Macca. It's about getting behind them. It's let's cheer them on. Let's hope we can get the cause a bit of a cup upset. We've done it once. Let's see if we can do it again. please do follow us on social media. Please do share us. Please do comment, support us. We're giving you, the fans, a voice about the lack of support towards the board. I hope they listen. I hope they take on board what we're saying. Please do, as I said, do follow us on social media. And until next time, up the mighty Wolves.